A ride on the Freedom Train podcast series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward. My man Patrick can't make it this week as well, dealing with his wife, but it's all good. Shout out to Patrick. Remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. You can visit their website at www.pactsinc.com to learn more about the organization, the codes of conduct, how to become a member, how to donate. They have a new tab, a sports package for track athletes, and I really think you need to check that out, learn how to get involved. And like I always tell you, for all my new listeners, if you hover your mouse over the More tab, you see the drop-down box with the Learning Center. If you hover your mouse over the Learning Center, there's a lot of resources that you can use, from audio resources to books, survival guides, all those things. Just visit the website at www.pactsinc.org. And also, while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. You can learn more about myself, Patrick, Enigma, September, and the plethora of shows that we have on our network, because we like to have fun and we like to make sure we create a space and a platform to get our information across. Black media at your finest. So today's show, I'm excited. Oh, I'm excited about today's show because this young lady, I met her, I want to say a year or two ago. And when I first met her, she was in the process, well, she was getting the starting information on releasing her book. She had a book in her heart that she needed to release, but also being able to look at her, get to know her. She's a wonderful, wonderful woman, a real business-minded. She's a native of Miami, Florida. She's in the beauty industry. She is in the finance industry. And like I say, she's an author. She spent time learning about accounting and finances and all those things. She went to school for it. She has it down packed. And now she's taking all of that information and put it together to be a resource for other people in the beauty industry. So you got to wrap your mind around that. So that's what we're dealing with. That's what we have. So the young lady's name is Cynthia Felix. And like I said, she hails from Miami, Florida. She's an author. She's a guru in finance, she's a guru in beauty, and she's about to set the world on fire with this new book that she has. So it's Miss Cynthia Felix. I want all y'all to put y'all hands together and welcome Miss Cynthia to our podcast.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you. I am doing awesome. Thank you, Joe. You put that introduction so well. You could not have said it any better.
No problem. Like I say, we want to make sure people feel welcome and everything when you come to the Freedom Train podcast, because our job is to allow you to brag upon yourself. So feel free to brag all day if you want to, because you do great things in the community. What you've built is amazing, and I just want to make sure my audience has a good idea of what you do and who you are.
Thank you.
No problem. So let's kind of get into it, because start off with a little background information. So can you give our audience some information about yourself and what inspired you or who helped you become the woman that you are today?
So I would first start off by saying that Cynthia Felix Pierre, she is someone who really cares for people. Her level of caring and compassion for people is not really revealed in her social skills or network, but really in her level of doing to help serve the need of others. Right. And there are many things and persons who have helped shape me to become the woman that I am today, not limited to my mother, Mr. Walter Hardiman. He is a former officer of Miami-Dade County, and he was really involved in politics. And many of my friends who I consider as God-ordained friends who always kept biblical principles relevant in our conversations. And that basically sums it up in terms of the people who really shaped me to becoming the woman that I am today.
Right, right. And you are a first-generation Haitian in America. So when I read that in your bio, the question popped in my mind is, what was your experience like growing up, being that you come from another culture? And I know Miami is pretty diverse, but this is still America. So what was kind of like your upbringing as a first-generation Haitian American?
Thank you for that question. I just felt like I just got shivers just from you asking me that question, mm-hmm. because I really don't have a lot of people ask me that question. It was really tough. It was really, really tough because I can just remember the many days when my mom would go to certain agencies asking for help, or when she needed to fill out documents. And she wasn't able to comprehend English that well. And so I would always be the spokesperson for her. And early on, people were trying to figure out, okay, how does this young girl know so much?
Mm-hmm.
How does she comprehend so much stuff? Like, this is something that for an adult. But I had to somewhat grow up a little fast in terms of equipping myself with a lot of knowledge that, you know, I typically would get when I get to high school or college when I was only in elementary school, so that have a better understanding of certain things. And even when the teacher would call, I would have to kind of break down things to my mom. But also that was a good thing. That was a positive thing. But on the downside, you know, there were in friends at school who, you know, would say negative things here and there. But over time, you know, I just brushed it off. I didn't allow myself to kind of contemplate and allow that to put me down or degrade who I was. But it was really tough. But I'm really happy that community that I was brought up in, it was like a melting pot. And so I literally had, you know, white Americans who were from Texas, who were my next door neighbors. I had Puerto Ricans on the right side. I had some folks from Jamaica right across the street from me. So I grew up with all types of people around me. And so it was a bit of a shock when I first moved here to Tallahassee, because I really wasn't accustomed to certain things. But being brought up in Miami, I had all types of friends. So that's why it wasn't a problem for me to travel and go anywhere and kind of become acclimated with the culture.
Right. Yeah. Because, you know, those experiences that you have when you're young do shape you. And, like, here, even this small country town of Tallahassee, it was amazing that I'm not going to say similar, but I had exposure to other cultures. But it wasn't until college till I really got exposed to other cultures. But you were exposed to that and basically exposed to adulting early. So that's interesting. That really helped. And that's some of the other things that helped shape you into being like the leader that you are today.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So the hair, doing hair, the beauty industry, that's one of your loves. So how did you get into the beauty industry? How did you start doing hair, and what was the main thing that really drove you to continue it on to today?
Because first off, getting into my interest for the beauty industry, I really didn't have an option when I developed an interest in hair. I was young. I was about 5-6 years old. My mom would always have me in the salon. I didn't have any trouble. I didn't get in trouble when I went there, but I would ask a lot of questions when I went into the salon. And I would recall being given several dolls and a mannequin, and I would literally teach myself how to braid hair. And in my grandfather's house, there was a full-blown salon space that would later accommodate my talent to service my cousins and my aunt. And I had two male cousins with a head full of hair that I would also provide hair braiding services to. And it was not until I got into, it was between third or fourth grade, that I would eventually service my first client outside of my family. And it was actually a school counselor who would always come into my fourth grade class that was. And her and the teacher will always ask me, you know, who did my hair? And I would tell them, hey, I did my own hair. They didn't believe me until my mom came to pick me up and they asked my mom. And my mom was my manager when I, at a young age, because she was like, okay, I don't want you being in anyone's house. Right. I would prefer for you to do it here at home. And so that counselor at my school, her and my mom had a great relationship. And so she was my first client, and I remember her husband coming, and her husband said, hey, hon, I thought you were going to go to a real salon and get your hair done. Why is this kid here? And she told her husband, this kid knows how to do hair. And when I got into college, my family was basically like, no, you're not going to do hair. We need a real career, especially anyone of Haitian descent. You know, when the children goes off to college, they're in their mind, they're thinking, okay, we need to have a lawyer, a doctor, you know, a psychiatrist, you know, all of these big-time jobs. This is something that you need to be going for. And this hair business is not going to cut it. But I still managed to stick to my studies, stay focused. You know, I had some challenges, and I was able to still build a clientele while I was in college. All a matter of discipline. It's all about a matter of discipline. And you actually focusing and dedicating a certain time to your studies, but also focusing and dedicating a certain time to providing hair services. And from there, I still maintain clients 3-4 years well after college, and they stayed with me. And that's how Braiding Element came about.
Right. Now, that's amazing. Like, I can't even get my words out, but that's amazing. Because what I'm thinking about is, you know, you're scrolling through social media, and you see a post of them praising a young girl for starting her own business. And that's what you did. It's just, you were just the pre-social media era, but that's exactly what you did. It's so impressive, because you have grown women who are looking at your hair like, man, okay, your hair is nice. So who did your hair? You tell them you did it, and they're like, nah, you couldn't have. When they found out, like, okay, so can you do my hair? That's amazing. So that's good. So, in your opinion, because I will say now, you're definitely an expert at styling hair. So in your opinion, what makes a good hairstylist? And for people going to get their hair done, what should they be looking for to ensure that their stylist helps them gain and maintain beautiful, healthy hair?
One thing, first off, I would say anyone out there performing hair services, you want to make sure that you must definitely acquire and maintain proper licensure to make sure that you're doing your due diligence to start off on the right foot as a good hairstylist, first and foremost. In addition to that, in order to be a good hairstylist, you must be personable. I don't recall. Now, even though I do my own hair, there have been times where I have, you know, I was feeling a little, wanting to treat myself, so I went to another stylist and allowed for them to do my hair. And every time, they were personable. Okay. It's very awkward. It would be very awkward to sit in someone's chair and they not have a conversation with you, crack a joke, you know, talk about something or try to determine what is it that you guys have as a common interest. And so the next is a good hairstylist must understand the individual hair, the individual hair needs of their client. And oftentimes knowing their way of life in terms of, is the client working out, how often they work out, are they swimming, are they engaging in other active activities, that's important. A good hairstylist wants to know that information. So you as a hairstylist, you can properly advise them as to what they need to do to help you help them in achieving their desired hair outcomes. Because there are certain things that pertains to our weather, pertains to chemical imbalance and all that. If the stylist is not aware of your life activities, oftentimes, you're not going to get the desired outcome that you want in your hair. So a good hairstylist is always asking questions.
Okay. Okay. And that's important because I don't have as much hair as I used to, but going to the barber shop, that's one of the main things that attract me to certain barbershops is the conversation that we would have when I'm getting my hair cut. So I can just imagine, because it takes a little longer to style the hair. So if you're in there just quiet, it's not going to make me want to come back.
Exactly.
You know. Okay. But also you were saying, know your client. So it's outside of just having a conversation, like know your client, know what they're doing, because you could give them a style that's not necessarily conducive to their lifestyle, and could that damage their hair?
Yes, absolutely. That can damage their hair because you may be using a chemical that is going to interfere with something that may be happening with them that week. And so, and also, if they've been prescribed certain medications by their doctor, that can actually interfere with certain chemicals or products that you're using on their hair. So you want to make sure that you are asking questions, but also the client needs to understand that, I understand there has to be a level of confidentiality with what your client reveals to you, but also give them a platform where they can trust you to share certain things, because you don't want to later find out that they were using this medication that drastically affects the outcome of whatever style or chemical you put to their hair.
Right. Okay. Okay, and so what advice would you give to people who are going to get their hairstyle? What should they be asking their stylist?
You know what? Nowadays, this is the reality of it all. You know, people get on social media, you see a nice, hot-fired style, and you're like, okay, I want this stylist to do my hair. There's a high chance that if this stylist has a huge following, they already have the rapport, they're great at what they do, but at the same time, you as a client, you as a customer, you want to make sure that you go to that stylist with what you're wanting to get,
right,
and making sure that you communicate to them issues that you've had in the past. And then you want to be very sure in terms of but you want to be very attentive to the response that they're giving you. Because if a stylist is giving you a response and they're very finicky or hesitant, they keep changing it, no, you need to be sure. You need to be sure. It's like when you go to the doctor, you give the doctor, you know, symptoms that you're having. The doctor is not going to say, okay, we're going to go with A. We're going to go with C. Okay, but we're going to go with D. No, you need to be sure with the answer, because then me as a client or customer, I'm starting to feel a bit taken aback by the response that you're giving me, because I'm not confident in you actually executing this service. So you need to make sure that there's a level of sureness.
Okay.
And what they're telling you.
Right, right.
You want to make sure they see their work. Now, there are certain stylists who do have a pet peeve, and it is one of mine, where you don't want to face the client in front of the mirror the whole entire time, you know. But you as a client, you as a customer, you have every right to look at that style, to look at that color, to ask questions as the service is being delivered, to make sure that you're getting the outcome that you requested for, the desired look that you requested for.
Right, right. Okay. But now that's that is important. It's because it's almost like the way you're describing it to me, the way I'm processing it in my head, it's like a well choreographed scene, like in the movie or something. You see the fight scene, but everybody's on the same page because everybody know. I know what this person is doing. This person know what that person is doing. So when others see it, it looks seamless. So if you all are on the same page, it makes it much easier for you to come out with a great style, and your hair is healthy, and you feel good about the money you've spent.
Yes, and you know what? One more thing I'm going to add to it. One thing I've always done is before I apply a product, shampoo, conditioner to a client's head, I let them know what's in it.
Okay.
I let them know what's in it. Because, for instance, in my case, there are certain products that have fragrances that I will break out to. So I would hate if I go to a stylist and they don't tell me that they use something in my hair, and I go home and I'm having this flare-up. I make sure that whatever I use, before I even apply it, before it even touches the scalp, I let them know, hey, this is what I'm about to put in your hair. Hey, I have this Dudley Leave-In Hydrate. Hey, I'm about to apply this to your hair. This is, you know, this is what it has. It's really great for curly textures. Your hair is tangly. It's great. I let people know what's in there.
Right. Okay. But that's once again, that's important. And how did you learn that? Did you learn that? Were you taught that, or something that you kind of picked up over time, or you learned that by mistake?
It's something I picked up over time. It's something I picked up over time, and definitely through other professionals that were in my circle. Because when you're in a profession, you can't go at it alone.
Right.
And when you have other people in that profession with you, you kind of hold each other accountable. And when you learn, you share it. And that's how you allow for yourself to grow within that profession.
Okay. Okay. Now, that's important. That's definitely, definitely important. So in addition to you being a master hairstylist, you actually had the opportunity to study finance in Beijing, China, and that's amazing in itself. So, why did you study finance? And I know you said earlier your parents didn't look at the beauty industry as something lucrative, so it kind of helped push you into finance. But can you kind of give us an idea of what your time in Beijing was like studying finance?
So just to correct that a little bit. I studied finance at Florida State, but after graduation, I felt as though I was lacking experience from my finance studies. So I wanted more, and this literally came to me as just a random thought. I said, okay, you know what? I want to go international. I want to because I was through studying finance, but I want to find a job opportunity on an international platform. And that's when I found out about a finance internship through China, and I found a company to sponsor me, and I went there. I found a place to stay. I found a company that was nearby from where I was staying. But then again, I had to find a way to get an instructor to teach me Mandarin at least twice a week. Because, you know, when you're immersed in a culture, you want to be able to navigate, you know, you want to be able to navigate on a daily basis in terms of going to the grocery store, the restaurant. You need to know what to say, the proper things to do, what not to do. So when I found this opportunity, it was great. But when I got there, I was a bit overwhelmed because I didn't see many of me. Mind you, this was back in 2012. It wasn't many of me. And so I remember within the second or third day of me being there, I said to myself, okay, I want to go back to the States. I am over it, because I was a little overwhelmed. You know, I had people, you know, for me everywhere, but at the end of the day, they really had great intentions. The people who were trying to communicate with me just had great intentions because they were not used to seeing a black woman in their country. But
right.
as far as studying finance, I chose to study finance because growing up, there was a lack of financial knowledge in my household. And because of that, I feel as though I had a setback. And so I needed to change that. And when I committed myself to studying finance and taking this temporary job opportunity in China, it really opened my eyes because economic power sits well with those who know the value of money.
Yes.
Those who know the value of the money they have and what its utility will be, not just for now, but also for future generations to come. Mm-hmm. And so anybody can make a dollar today, but you need to know what the utility of that dollar, what is the use of that dollar today?
Right.
And for future generations to come. So if you're just playing for the dollar today, you have a problem. And so when I had an opportunity to take this temporary job opportunity in finance in China, it really changed my outlook on a lot of things in terms of money, investment, and managing. It really changed my outlook, like I said, because I came up not necessarily my whole family, because my granddad and my uncles were great businessmen. They were great with money. But in my household, mm-hmm. with my mom, there was a lack of financial knowledge.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's the story of a lot of us who come from backgrounds where we're not really taught what financial literacy is or those things. I know my dad would say, save your money. But, you know, we were like 5, 6 years old, that went in one ear, came out the other. So I wish he would have made us save the money and do all those different things. Habits would be a little better now, but you're exactly right. Being taught that finance in the house is so important. So when you go out and you do decide to start businesses or you come across a large sum of money, you know how to make that money work for you.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay. So, through that experience, you studied finance at FSU, but then you had you were able to go to China to further your learning of finance, and then you know years later you started your business. So, which lessons from this experience that you use to most in starting your business and making sure that you become successful within your business?
With starting my business, Riegelwood Consulting, I would say that even to this day, I have more work to do. You know, everything is still a work in progress. However, I would say understanding the time value of money is one of my greatest takeaways. Understanding the time value of money, a lot of us don't even have that down pat.
Right.
Some of us are prepared to, you know, get our paychecks next week or at the end of the month, whenever. But the time value of money is still not understood by many of us. And that was one of my greatest takeaways. And another thing would be creating and manipulating spreadsheets specific to my specific business situation is what finance has really helped me. Especially with getting this far, because even though I use spreadsheets in finance, in accounting, I even use it, you know, for my personal life function.
Okay.
Because it helps me in organizing and understanding not only what is my money going to do for me right now, but how my money is going to better serve me in November, December, in 2020, and 2021. And so these are some of the things I was able to take away from studying finance.
Okay. Yeah, I may need you to show me about the spreadsheet and get my life together on the side. But that's great organization, though. Like, to be, to be successful, you have to be organized. And so it's like you, and that's a habit for you as well. So that's another amazing thing about that.
Yes, and to be honest, you know, you can be taught something, but until you start implementing it to make it a habit, that's when a change will really come. And so with all these technology resources we have around us, because I was so used to always having spreadsheets on my computer, but I'm like, okay, I'm not always toting my computer everywhere. So I said, okay, it's time to put it on my phone. And so I am able to make sure that the spreadsheet that I am updating, whether it's for business purposes or personal functions, it has real-time information, and I'm also manipulating it with whatever changes come about.
Right. Okay. That's definitely needed. So, because it's a lot of things on your plate that you do that help others. And in addition to that, you're also a salon consultant. And
yeah,
I know when you say salon consultant, for some people they automatically get it. But could you break down what a salon consultant is and why you chose to become a salon consultant?
Now, there are some things or titles you gain simply by doing.
Right.
And not just doing it once, where I want to get with this is that there are some functions and activities that I had to partake in or engage in throughout the matriculation of my accounting career and finance career. And in engaging in these functions, I was able to build additional skill sets and acquire knowledge that serves a great purpose in my salon consulting operations.
Mm-hmm.
And as I acquired these skill sets, I made sure that, you know, I put them in a flow chart. I honestly didn't know how it was going to come together.
Right.
But that day in 2017 when I said, you know what, I'm going to become a salon consultant.
Okay.
And I really didn't have a roadmap. I got on the internet and I started searching, okay, I need to find a salon consultant so I can try to see what they got going on. I literally couldn't find one. The one salon consultant, it wasn't a person, but it was a whole business that consisted of real estate agents, financial advisors. They're all the way in California, but it was a salon consulting firm.
Okay.
And essentially everything that I put in my flow chart already with the skill sets that I had built over time and the knowledge that I built over time was comparatively similar to what they had. So I said, okay, this is not going to be a copycat, but I literally was trusting God and where he was taking me, because idea came to me, it was literally God-given, but I literally didn't know where I was going to go with it. And so I remembered, because people always ask me, how did you get started? And this is how I got started, because there was a young lady who reached out to me when I was heavy in the salon, you know, doing hair, and I assisted her 3 years prior to that to getting her license. When I reached out to her in 2017 and told her, hey, I'm starting a salon consulting business. Now, at the time, I really didn't know which way I was going to head. And she said to me, oh, my goodness, are you really starting a salon consulting business? Because I just, like, quit my job, like, 2 months ago, and I am starting my beauty business. And I said, oh.
Right.
She was like, well, can you give me some directions? So literally that was my first client. And when I tell you, within a matter of 6 to 7 months, she was blowing up bigger than me.
Right.
And the thing about it, I was truly ecstatic, because there was no envy, there was no jealousy. It really made my heart smile to see me using all my skill sets, using all my knowledge to help her build her business. And she was one of the first persons to actually purchase my book when it came out. And from there, I was like, okay, this is what I need to be focusing on. I need to be focusing on this. And so that was the confirmation for me that, okay, this is going to work. This is going to work. And everything else fell in line.
Well, I mean, and you kind of, you do have to, and this more than kind of, you have to give yourself a pat on the back, because great coaching can take a good player, a good person, a good player, and make them great. So for her to blow up the way she did from the information that you gave her, that's a testament to your time, the time that you put in, the work that you put in, all of your expertise, and your ability to translate that information to another person. So you definitely have to give yourself a pat on the back for that.
Yes, thank you. I'm doing that as we speak.
But, I mean, because it is, it's like being able to really sit down and look at a situation and look at the different factors that went into this person becoming successful, because no one person becomes successful just like being an island. So when you are able to reach out to other people, and the other people that you reach out to are more than reliable, you're going to be successful, and that's what you helped her do. So in turn, you are successful as a salon consultant because you have the proof.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes, ma'am. So that's amazing. And so you mentioned your book. And so, Beauty, Where Beauty Demands Structure. I love that title, by the way. So, and that's a, you recently released your book. You've had how many, you've had a couple book release events, correct?
Yes, a total of three.
Okay, okay. And do you have any more coming up?
No, not right now. I don't have any more coming up right now.
Okay. So, Where did you get the title of the book, and why did you write the book, and what is the book about?
Okay, first I am going to start up with the why did I write the book. So when I first started my business with salon consulting, remember I said I wasn't sure which way to go with this. Of course, I gained my first client. But within that first 6 months, I went and sat down with a business consultant, and he basically was talking to me. He said, well, you're really going to have to work hard to put yourself out there because, you know, no one really knows me. And so I recall him telling me, you need to get on YouTube possibly and, you know, start doing some videos, put some videos out there. And at that moment, I thought to myself, no, that's not an option because I don't like being on front screen like that or doing videos. That's not me. And so I went home. I thought about it. I said, okay, I am really, he's telling the truth. I need to do something to put myself out there.
Right.
And so I gave it about a month, 2 months rolled around. And I went to a hair show, and there were a couple people that stopped at my booth when I was in Atlanta, and they were like, hey, are you an educator? You need to be teaching. And I said, no. And then I went home, I thought about it, I said, oh, I had several people ask me, even these ladies from Canada asked me if I was an educator. And I said, you know what, I need to do something. And so I said, you know what, I need to write a book. And I started laying out the chapters. That was my first thing. I started laying out the chapters because the thing about it is if I am creating this book for people in the beauty industry, I need to get to the point. I can't write a 200, 300, 400-page book. No. I need to get to the point, make it short and sweet, but I need to make sure that all the information is relevant and that they can take away information from that book to implement in their business, and that is exactly what I did. I literally created 10 chapters. I call them phases, and I call them phases instead of chapters because in business, you know, as we're going through different phases.
Right.
And after each phase, I put a reflection writing area after each phase, and the reason why is because I understand that everyone who is purchasing my book is on different levels in the beauty industry. Some are more advanced than others. And so if you're reading phase number one, in phase number one is much more for someone who is not as advanced. But then you can use that reflection writing area to take some notes as far as what you gain from that section and how you're going to implement it in your beauty business.
Okay.
And that's what I did for each of the phases. Now, the title, Where Beauty Demands Structure. At first, I said, okay, I don't know what I'm going to call the book. I don't know what I'm going to call the book. I don't want to spend too much time thinking about the title. I just know I need to write a beauty book, a beauty business book. And so I thought about my tagline for Regal Wood Consulting. My tagline, which is my slogan, is Where Beauty Demands Structure. And I said to myself, there is power in that alone. There's no ands, ifs, and buts. I'm going to simply take my slogan from my business, and that is going to be the title of my book.
That's great. So that's great marketing.
So I basically took the slogan from my business that became the title of my book, and my first session with a business consultant where it was communicated to me to create a video, and right then at that moment, creating a video was not an option. I thought, and after going to hair shows and having people ask me if I'm an educator, I said, okay, it's about time that I come out with a book.
Right. Yeah, because basically it's like the universe is telling you that you have the knowledge and the skill sets to educate others in this, so you need to do this one way or another. Right.
Absolutely.
So now, did you start the YouTube channel?
No. With the YouTube channel, I just created a YouTube last week simply because last week, so this is right on time, because I had a virtual book launch, and I know that, you know, when you do a live video on a Instagram or social media platform, it's not going to stay up for so long. Yeah. And I wanted to provide another platform for people to still watch the video book launch. It's actually a virtual book launch. So I actually recorded that, and it's actually on the YouTube platform. And my YouTube name is Regal Cindy on there.
All right. So everybody, y'all go subscribe to Regal Cindy, and that way you can get the information you need, make sure that you are not just – watching somebody, trying to learn from somebody who's just talking, because and I like how you kind of, how we set that up as far as giving your information first and then talk about the YouTube channel, because there are a lot of people on YouTube who learn one or two new moves and they now have put out a video, and you know, because we're in the instant age, in the microwave age, where everybody wants things quick and fast and in a hurry, but you understand that it takes time. It takes time to build these things. And it takes time to learn this information. So you have like over 20 years of experience in doing what you're doing. So that's one of the best things about you and your channel.
Yes. Absolutely. Now, you know, I never really thought about it, but you're right. I actually have over 20 years of experience.
You do. You are a legitimate expert at what you do. Legitimate expert. Yes, ma'am. So with that being said, playing off the title of your book, Where Beauty Demands Structure, in your opinion and from your experience, how does a business owner create structure within their business, and why is having structure important anyway, in your opinion?
Okay. First of all, every business is going to vary from one business to the next. I've had a chance to visit many salons, and every salon I've gone into, the style, the layout, and just the whole atmosphere, the ambiance is different.
Right.
Now, you as the beauty business owner, the salon owner, the barbershop owner, you must determine what is it needs to be in place in order for me to run my business successfully.
Right.
Not just the talent. You already got the talent. That's why the salon is open. That's why the barbershop is open. That's why the spa is open. You already have the talent. What are the things you need to have
place to make sure that this whole process is seamless, that you're able to get the customer in the door, the customer is able to feel comfortable, and the customer is able to walk out happy.
Right.
You have to think about this. And so one of the first things I want to point out is in creating that structure, you have to consider your team. You have to consider your team. You have to consider their skills, their overall fit. If they're extremely talented but lack the soft skills needed to work well with others. Because if they lack the soft skills to work well with other people in the barbershop or the salon, it could become a recipe for disaster. Because I have seen some, I haven't seen it in real life, I've just seen it on videos.
Mm-hmm.
But it can become a recipe for disaster. And as a matter of fact, I take that back. I have seen it in real life. Now, and character must work together in harmony. I do not care. You can be a great stylist. You can do flawless hair. But if your character stinks, no, it's not going to work. And that right there, that's a part of the structure that you're creating for your business. You want to make sure that you employ individuals, that you bring on talent who – that have the skills and character working together in harmony.
Okay.
And guess what? The beauty business owner is not exempt. You, as the owner of the business, you are not exempt because you have to set the tone for what your business is to reflect. It's like a mother and a child. If you expect for your child to act a certain way, you have to understand that you set the tone. You have to be the example. And then at creating that structure for your business, you have to know your limitations and you have to set boundaries. Because if you tell your talent and your employees, hey, the shop opens up at this time, everybody has to be in position at this time. Because you have customers and clients walking in, you want to make sure that people are being serviced in a timely manner. That's all a part of creating structure for your business. You want to make sure that you have systems in place, not only just behind the chair, but systems in place at your receptionist desk, because you want to make sure, because the most critical thing is that the receptionist of the salon or the barbershop, they can serve as a gatekeeper to your business. So if you have someone there who doesn't have a pleasant attitude, they can actually – lose business for you.
When I say
know your limitations and set boundaries, it's better to be a master at one thing instead of a generalist in everything.
Yes,
because ma'am. I have seen where you have a stylist who's dibbling and dabbling in every style under the rainbow. Every style. And the thing about it is, have you mastered time and executing all of those styles in one day? Because the reality of it all is you may have somebody sitting out there in the waiting area longer than you intended for them to sit because you have not mastered your time on a particular style. That should not be happening. Right then and there, that's a cause for a break in the structure of your business.
Right. Right. Now, it's interesting, and I'm glad you're hitting upon this as far as being timely, understanding that structure goes from the top to the bottom. Everybody has to be accountable for their actions because, you know, growing up, and even now, I would hear about women going to salons, being in there 6 to 8 hours, all these different things. I don't know the different styles that they get in, none of that stuff, but I just know it's a lot of women, since I was growing up, would go to the salon and basically spend all day there. And so what you're saying, though, is you still have to, even though some hairstyles may take longer than others, timeliness is still important. And if you don't have that as a part of your structure, along with a great staff, great leaders, and especially great front office people or receptionist people, you're going to do more losing business than you will gaining business.
Exactly. Exactly. Because one thing I can tell you is that in doing hair for me, if I schedule a service, with someone. And that's another thing to structure, creating structure. Your website platform should do a lot of work for you, because oftentimes you will find barbers, hair professionals, they will indicate what the time is for delivering that service. They'll let you know if it's going to take 30 minutes, if it's going to be an hour, if it's going to be 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours, they'll let you know. And they'll put a disclaimer there at the bottom. Service should be started within 15 minutes. You should not be waiting more than 30 minutes. You know, because sometimes there's a little setback. But the thing about it is, when you have those times, the delivery service times on the website, that actually saves you a headache as a business owner. Because when that person sits in your chair, they already know how much time they have to devote to getting that service done.
Right, right.
So they're not blindsided by anything.
That is important. Like you have, no matter, like you said, no matter the business you're in, you still have to be customer centric. You still have to understand that your service speaks volumes, and if your service ain't together, it's going to turn people away. So, all right.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. So, I know a little bit about your book writing progress. Or the process, rather, because, you know, you and I had conversations. But for our audience, what was your process like? Like, what did it take to write your book, and what do you want your readers overall to gain from your book?
Now, Joe, I would say I felt like this book was not going to come out, but I am truly thankful. I'm truly thankful that this book is done. I don't want to say done, because I'm working on another special piece. I'm not going to say anything about it. You know, everything is a work in progress. But during my work in progress, during my process of writing this book, I, you know, of course, any good thing, you know, you're going to face challenges. So I had a computer crash. I had a computer crash, lost the USB with the file. And I literally remembered, during the book writing process, I saved a copy on another computer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, and then when I realized that my computer crashed, my USB was lost, I recall, yeah, I did save a backup. The only downside is that my backup only went up to phase 8. So I had to kind of, so give myself some time to do phase 9 and phase 10 all over again.
Yeah, I understand.
And that's why paper and pen is really great, because I was taking notes on paper and pen. So I had some ideas already hashed out on paper. But with the reader, the individuals who are, let me go back to a little bit on the book writing process. Initially, I was going to hire an outside agency to do everything with the publishing process. And I recall speaking to one of my close friends, and she said, Cynthia, why are you going to, you know, pay all this money to have all this publishing work done? She was like, I've published before, and because I know you and your level of knowledge, you can actually do most of this work by yourself. So I actually went through a course and did a little bit of studying, and I actually published the book myself. And but because I am really big on supporting other businesses, I reached out to a young lady that I met at a conference, and she did the copyright portion for me, because I also want to make sure that I'm supporting other business owners. So I didn't want this to just be about me, so I found a way to support other people. Even though I knew I could do it on my own, I wanted to have some economic benefit for other people in this process.
And
throughout all of that, this same person who did my copywriting, she helped me with marketing, and she brought the pieces together. And it's really great when you have somebody else on team with you, because they hold you accountable, and they'll help you to see the end. Now, for the reader, what I want the reader to gain in reading this book is a level of consistency, dedication, with no hesitation to implementation. And what I mean by that is that I have 10 phases laid out in this book. Now, with these 10 phases laid out in this book, there's nothing complicated. I didn't try to use, you know, words that were not going to be, that the reader would not be able to understand, where they would have to pull out a dictionary to know what I was talking about. I tried to lay it out. I even have calculations in this book. And with sales tax, calculating sales tax, and even with determining how you should profit on square footage in a building that you are leasing. But with the 10 phases that I lay out in this book, from insurance, retirement, ethics, morale, tenants to entrepreneurship, building relations in social media, education, exposure, pricing structure, of all of these phases, the greatest takeaway I want for every reader is consistency in their beauty operations, dedication to what they're doing for the industry. And if there is something that they discover after reading this book that they were lacking, whatever it is, from phase 1 to phase 10, whatever it is that they're lacking, no hesitation to implementation. Do not hesitate to implement it if it's going to make your business better. And if you're not knowledgeable about it, there is enough help out there to help you implement whatever that is.
There you go. Now, that's important, and I'm glad you're saying it like that, because you wrote a book to give specific information that can be used. It's not a book to just read and just, hey, I read the book. It's to utilize the information that's in the book, and that's what's so powerful about your book and about the whole, your concepts around everything that you've created. And it's if you use this information, you too would be successful, because it's tried, true information that has helped you become successful, has helped other people become successful. And if they really are serious about the beauty industry and they read your book, that's a step up or something that can help them. That's an asset to help them become more successful. So,
and even if they are just a student in beauty school or barber school, this book will also serve a great purpose for them, because that will allow them to be a couple steps ahead. Because there are many covered in this book, I can guarantee you, that's not in their curriculum.
Right, right. That comes from experience.
Yes.
Okay. You got me excited over it. I'm just all hyped and stuff, because the passion that you're speaking with is infectious. And when you are in conversation with somebody who's passionate about what they do, if you don't get hype about that, something wrong with you, so.
You've pointed it out, and this is what has allowed me to gain clients, because mm-hmm. I go and meet some clients for the first time. You know, sometimes I'm a bit hesitant because I've never met them before. I don't know how this is going to turn out after I meet with them, but they hear the passion and they hear how excited I am, and they're like, where did you come from? Are you God sent? And they, like, automatically they want to work with me.
Yeah,
and I'm truly thankful for that.
Right, and next time they ask you, are you God sent? But yes, can't you tell? So, as an experienced professional within the beauty industry, I kind of already know the answer, but I want you to articulate this for the audience, because I know you're gonna knock it out the park, but. Talking about the standards of beauty in America and the beauty industry. So, what are your thoughts on American standards of beauty, and what advice would you give to women and young girls to help them realize that all the beauty that they're seeking is already inside of them?
You know what? You could not have said it any better. It's all inside of us. And if you can't even realize it is inside of you, make it your business to have mentors, in people to awaken that. Awaken that within you. Because sometimes with everything that I see happening in the beauty industry and some of the messages that I see as the American standards of beauty, sometimes I think to myself, does it take all of that? It doesn't.
Right.
Because on a normal day, most of the time, I don't even put on an average day, I don't put on all of this makeup. To be honest, I love wearing weave, but if I had to pick my number one hairstyle, it would be my Grace Jones cut, as you can see on my front cover of my book.
Right.
I love my Grace Jones cut, but every now and then I get in a mood where I said, you know what, I just want to put on some extensions. But that does not define me at all. And the thing about it is, the reality of it all is that I make it my business to uplift other women and embrace them about their natural beauty.
Right.
Because I have firsthand seen, and I've had people even tell me this, I cannot put that natural kinky hair in my head because my husband may divorce me.
Well, you might have married the wrong person then. I don't know.
That's what I was thinking. And right. I was just shocked by that response. Wow. I was just shocked by that response. And so it is my business, and I try to, because to be honest, if it's a grown woman, I try my best to embrace your natural beauty as best as I can. But when it comes to those young clients that I'm servicing, those young girls, I try to start with them very hard.
Yeah.
I try to start with them because it starts. It's starting with the young girls because they're seeing all of this. And they're thinking that if they're not wearing fingernails, if they're not wearing lashes or mink lashes, or if they're not wearing a frontal, even the high school girls, I went to a high school graduation not too long ago, and every young lady had on a lace front, every high school, and everyone had on a lace front. I saw one young lady with her big afro out. But the thing about it is, I am making it my business. Every time I see a young girl with her natural hair out, I make sure I give her great compliments because it's a beautiful thing. And I'm just truly thankful that I'm married to someone who loves my Grace Jones haircut. I can switch back and forth with no problems.
Right. That's amazing. But now, and in addition to that, from my side as a male, I know I try to encourage and uplift and tell women and young girls that they're beautiful in their natural state. And I also remind a lot of these people who I guess they're supposed to be pro-black and conscious or whatever, who make it their mission to try to make black women feel bad for wearing weave or a wig or something. And as a historian, I try to tell them, you need to do your history. You really need to do your history because this is not something that's new. Now, what's new is the standard of beauty. That's new. But what's not new is the accessories. Women, especially black women, have been doing that for thousands of years. But you, one of the main things is making sure that our women know their natural beauty, embrace themselves, love themselves for who they are, because the weave or the wig would do nothing but enhance what's already there.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I see it for myself, and I am going to be real honest about this. And, you know, I'm not taken aback anymore, but I realize that whenever I am wearing extensions, like I am full out in makeup, what is it, mink lashes, when I am just to the nines with my with all my beauty regimens, all the extra stuff that, you know, that's just a bonus.
Right.
I get so much, I go out in public and just hairs be turning. Like,
right.
Neck about to break. And I'm not going to say the same thing doesn't happen. When I have my cut, I mean, when I get my cut, I always get compliments, but not on the level of me with all this extra added bonus features.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, see, that, and that's, once again, that's on us men who understand what's going on to pull these other men and educate these other men, but also educate these young boys, because we don't want another generation of young men growing up thinking that in order for a black woman to be beautiful, that she has to resemble a white woman. She has to have so those type of features or anything like that. So it's just hard work that I know I've been doing, the other men that I've been working in the community with, is when we're around women, to uplift and empower our women and let them know, remind them of who they are, the royalty they have in them, the beauty that they have. And don't let nobody define what's beauty for you. You define it for yourself, because the rest of these people, they don't matter to you. Your opinion is the only one that matters.
Exactly. Exactly. Absolutely.
Yes, ma'am. But, and it's just, and that's what another reason why I want to have you on this podcast, because there are a lot of people who are in the beauty industry, but the way you go about doing it, it just interests me, it attracted me, and I want to make sure that I get you on here. Plus, you dropped your book, so I was like, well, you know what? Let's make this happen, because this woman is awesome, and my listeners need to know, and more people need to know about it. So if people don't know, well, now they know. So we got to our last question in this interview, and it's usually my co-host Patrick's question. So I'm not going to do it how he normally, because I have to do the drum roll and all that, because we be cracking jokes on each other. He looks special, but it's okay, right? But the question is, if you were the all-powerful ruler of Black America, what would you change, and what would your message to the people be?
Woo! Let me tell you something. That question right there just gave me shivers. So I take my first my comment back on when you asked me about being a first-time the first generation Haitian American here, so I really have shivers on this question.
Okay.
So my question, my response to Black America would be: shift your mindset, support each other, mm-hmm. because. You know that you have the ability to decide who you give economic power to. And this right now, what I just said, is even more critical to this day. Shift your mindset, because you know what? You can tell Black America to support each other. However, if the mindset is not shifted, you will find envy, jealousy, conniving behavior to trample the support that was supposed to be genuine, no longer genuine. And that goes hand in hand. Shift the mindset and support each other. Because there are so many Black individuals and businesses that I support. Now, sometimes the service may not be tip-top, but right. I always make it my business to circle back around and tell them directly
right.
what it I was not pleased with. Let them know I want to see you prosper. I want to see
right.
you become great in doing this, and I want to continue supporting you, because this is just not about me or you. This has to be a collective thing. And then also, a message I would make to Black America is find an opportunity to impact the youth. Whether it's one youth, two, or 100, Find an opportunity to impact the youth. Because whether or not you know this, Joe, I also work in the education industry.
Right.
And I see firsthand some of the things that are plaguing our youth. And it really brings me down to a very emotional state. And I said to myself, no, 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 no. We got to find a way. I tell myself, you got to be the change agent.
Yes.
You have to be the change agent. I may not be able to help 50 or 100, but starting with one will make the difference. So every black person in America, black America, impact the youth. Find a way to impact the youth, whether it's through a nonprofit organization or even if it's just in your community. If you don't even want to start a nonprofit organization, you see a mother or father that's struggling and raising their child, or you just see a child that really has no kind of structure at home. They lack the skills they need to flourish in school. Help them or find resources to help them. Because we put that on our agenda, this generation today, this generation of kids will be much better off.
Yes, they will.
What I said to begin with, shift the mindset and support each other.
Yes, 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 yes. Those are that's important. I mean, we have to do that. It's on us to save us. We're all we have, and if we don't do it, nobody else will do it. Because no, it's not like anybody else has come to the forefront to help Black America. So Black America, we have to do it on our own. And with leaders like you, though, we can. With people like you impacting the youth who are passionate about what you do, who love yourself, who was a positive force in the community, the kids that you see on a regular basis are going to be better for that. And so we want to make sure that you understand that we appreciate everything that you bring, especially me being a Tallahassee. I appreciate everything that you bring to the city, everything that you do for the youth, that you do for the young adults, for the adults, everybody, because you're definitely an asset to the beauty industry, to all the industries that you're in, but you're definitely an asset to this city. And that's another reason why I want to have you on the podcast. I appreciate what you do.
And one thing I want to add is this, because I have to take this tagline from my pastor, because and shifting your mindset and supporting each other, you would not be able to do that if you're not thinking big. You have to think big. You have to think big. Because the only thing that will keep you from shifting your mindset and supporting each other is if you're thinking on a very small platform.
Yep.
So it's time to think big. Think big to the point that it blows your mind.
That's true. That is true. Man, I appreciate you. I definitely enjoyed this conversation. I enjoyed all the information that you've given. And you are truly, once again, you're a gem for this community and just for Black America, period. And I want to make sure that we celebrate you and what you do. And that's another reason why this platform is created, to be able to celebrate people like yourself and give a voice and a means for you to get your message out as well. So could you give your YouTube channel again and where people can contact you? Because somebody going to need their hair done. Somebody going to need some consulting information. So how can people get in contact with you? And what's your website again?
Yes. So my Instagram handle is Regal Cindy. So Regal is REGAL_Cindy, CINDY. And for any person who is listening to this podcast, knows anybody in the beauty industry who are interested in getting my book, they can actually DM me, and they'll be able to get two of my books. They'll be able to get two of my books, listen closely, for a special price of $30. So you're almost getting two books for one. So anybody who's listening to this podcast and actually wants to purchase a book for someone they know in the beauty industry or for themselves, they can purchase two books for the price of $30. My website is regalwoodconsulting.com. You can also find that website on my Regal Cindy platform. And for my hair braiding page, it is Braiding Element. So it's Braiding_Element. Right now, the delivery of services to individuals have been at a pause because I am only providing braiding services for special events and for weddings. And so once I continue providing services for individuals, I will also mention that on the Braiding Element platform. So please be sure to follow Braiding Element and keep a lookout for future posts.
Yes, and what's your YouTube channel again?
The YouTube channel is Regal Cindy. So just like the Instagram handle, R-E-G-A-L, without the underscore, Cindy, C-I-N-D-Y. And the first video that's on there is the virtual book launch session for Where Beauty Demands Structure.
Yes, ma'am. Like I said, I definitely appreciate you. I really enjoyed this conversation. I wish you even more success in your life. And anytime you got some messages you want to get out, you have a platform here to be able to use. We'll bring you back on. However we need to do it, you just know that this platform is built for the community, and you can use it whenever you need to use it to get your messages out, because I know you have nothing but positive information to get out. And so I just thank you once again for stopping by the podcast and talking with me and allow my audience to get to know you a little better, because you're just a great person. So I appreciate you.
Well, thank you so much, Joe. I definitely have a spirit of gratitude for you bringing me on, and I'm truly happy that I was able to share this information with all the listeners. And I look forward to reaching out to you soon in the near future for future collaborations.
Yes, ma'am. Definitely have to do that. So I ain't going to hold you up any longer, but thank you once again, and I was definitely going to be keeping up with you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, everybody, Mrs. Cynthia, right? Cynthia Felix Pierre. Like, you have to just see her in person and everything for what she do, but you heard, hey, look, I don't hang around or mess with no average, whatever, people who think small. You heard it, think big. So y'all put your hands together for Miss Cynthia Felix Pierre. Yes, y'all, and you don't stop. I feel the beat, y'all, and you don't stop. Yes, y'all, you don't stop. Oh, clap it up, clap it up, clap it up, clap it up, clap it up. She got the gym. She dropped them gems. Before I close the show, I remember, man, website is www.freedomtrainradio.com, where you can learn more about us and stay in contact. You can also go to the website, and for all those who have Android, you can download our Freedom Train Network app directly to your phone. That way you will never have to go search for our podcast again. Even though we're on all major podcast networks, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Radio Republic, Spotify, all them things out there, we own it. We're on it. Remember, you can support the Fix Sports Podcast on Patreon. Just do patreon.com/thefix. You can also support Lessons from the Screen on Patreon, patreon.com/LFTS, Lessons from the Screen. So, man, this is how we do it, what we do when we do what we hear. Freedom Train Podcast Series, I'm Joseph Ward. Shout out to Patrick, and once again, congratulations on your new addition to your family, your young baby girl. And, man, can't wait to get you back on this podcast so we can talk about you in your face, man. But other than that, two fingers in the air like a player. Y'all know we just don't care. But we're out of here. Peace.